All right, here we are in talk number 005. We're still in December of 2018. And the reason that is significant is because that's what we're going to talk about. We are going to talk about reflections on this year. I am calling this one Let Go of What Is Behind and Other End of the Year Reflections. Woohoo! So let's jump right into it. No special comments before we get started. As far as any house projects I'm working on or cleaning I'm doing, which is seems like a big part of my day when it comes to having four little rascals running around every day. Big projects outside will be happening this winter since it's the cool season here in Northern California before it gets up over 100 in the summer. So I have some peace and quiet today. The family is out and about and I'm able to record. So let's get started. Here we go. Letting go of what is behind and other end of the year reflections. So let's start with first reflection. Don't let the bad outweigh the good. So looking back at your 2018 year, or whatever year this is that you are listening to this, what are some bad things that happened? And they seem to come to the surface sometimes when we reflect. So we look back on relationships and say, wow, I had some struggles this year in relationships, and I do not enjoy thinking about this year because of these relationships that went south or did not work out very well. Maybe you had a breakup. Maybe you had a misunderstanding. Maybe somebody misunderstood you, or both. In any case, it's easy to focus on that, so you have to consciously choose to look at the good relationships that happened and the successes that you had. In relationships, also in fitness, don't let the good outweigh the bad. We are all on a journey of trying to get more fit. Well, at least many of us are, and so it is easy again to remember the ways that we have not been successful in eating the way that we want to eat, or being able to afford the kind of groceries we want to afford, or get to the gym as often as we want to. But again, it is the negative attitudes, it is the negative focus that will keep us from achieving our goals of moving forward in this area. So do not focus on the bad. Think about the successes that you had this year in fitness. And next is progress in moving forward in your life. And we're still on the topic of not letting the bad outweigh the good. But progress in moving forward in your life will be inhibited by the focus on the bad things and the way that we did not succeed in this past year. So that was reflection number one. Reflection number two is remember what is behind you only enough to motivate you to move forward. Let me say that again. Reflection number two is remember what is behind you only enough to motivate you to move forward. So back to relationships. Some relationships were meant to be for only a season. You know, like taking a class. You take a class and you have a professor, and that professor means a lot to you. That teacher, that instructor was powerful in your life, and then they're gone. Maybe you move back to your state or your country. Maybe you had just gone to school there for a short time and you had this great experience and you wish that you could duplicate that, or you wish that that could continue, but it's time for another season. So some other relationships that are for a season are maybe being in a sport, or maybe being in a rec league, or maybe joining something that was that you wanted to learn, and now you're not in that anymore. And that's okay too. And some of those things are difficult for some of us. In my particular philosophy of life, I really appreciate long-term relationships, people who stick with me through thick and thin. So for me, this one is challenging as well, having these short-term relationships that allow me to enjoy life, that allow me to grow, that hopefully is growth for the other person too, and enjoyment for the other person, and that I have seasoned this season of their life, that maybe it's been mutually beneficial to both of us. Many of us have fits and starts when it comes to fitness. And so in this topic of remembering what is behind you only enough to motivate you, you have to remember that as we're growing, we're constantly learning what doesn't work as much as what does work. So what didn't work for you this year? What, don't go back to those same methods, those same methodologies. Oftentimes people say to push through, and I understand the concept of that, absolutely. But you will also notice, especially when it comes to this topic, that some things that worked for other people will not work for you. One of the stories I heard recently was that someone tried a diet program, a style of eating, a way of eating, a types of foods, and for a person close to them, it worked for their friend, but it did not work for them. So think about the things that have worked for you. You know what they are. You've done it before, a certain type of workout combined with a certain type of eating, and you watched you get your weight under control, or you saw, you felt significantly different. Focus on that. Focus on what did work and go after that. So fits and starts, it's okay. So remember the past only enough to help you motivate for the future. And maybe last year was a season of rest. So maybe as far as progress goes, you don't feel like you progressed forward in life as much as you were hoping to. Maybe you didn't sign up for that class. Maybe you didn't go to that gym. Maybe you didn't develop that relationship or spend enough time with your aging parents or spend enough time with your growing kids. And so you feel like, oh, I just did. I mean, what did I even do this past year? So allow yourself this season of rest. Maybe that's what it was. Maybe it was a time that your body, your mind, your spirit needed to rejuvenate itself. And allow that to be okay, because it is okay. So that was reflection number two. Reflection number three of this past year: get out of your own way. Get out of your own way. This is a big one. See, because the thing is, we make excuses. And the problem is, they are really good ones. I mean, come on. We have, right and left, we have excuses. We have reasons. I mean, a family member got ill, and we were back and forth to their house or to the hospital after work, and we really needed to spend time with them. I get it. I hear it. I understand it. That, man, that's a really good excuse. And you wake up a month, two, 3 months later, and you are feeling bloated and, not healthy, or you're feeling lethargic, or you're feeling like you're not getting enough rest because you haven't taken care of yourself. So we have to remember that we can't be there for people if we haven't been there for ourselves. That whole loving ourselves first thing is so important for the long-term health of ourselves. So making excuses, these other really good excuses, I'm not sure if I can top that one, but is there so much to clean up when I got home? You gotta understand that my life has so many different facets, and I'm driving the kids to all the different activities. And I mean, we want to have our kids have a good education, so maybe we have them in private school. Or maybe there's clubs and all of these things that are helping to facilitate the growth of our children. I heard a story recently of a family that was going to homeschool their kids, pull their kids out of traditional, maybe public or private school, and homeschool them. And after some serious thought and looking at the growth of their children and just saying there is some emotional disconnect that our kids are having, like they just seem frustrated, and it seems like more than just frustration with education. And so they took the year off. What? They took a year off of school, and they just spent time with their kids, played games, went for walks, focused on their emotional health. And it made all the difference. They reconnected with their kids in a way that wasn't focused on duty, responsibility, obligation, what the world around them said was important, what the world was demanding that they accomplish from week to week and month to month. It's easy to let the world, and I'm using that term in a generic term as in maybe your church or your public school or your friends or your family or your parents or grandparents, these different people that speak into your life tell you what is important. And I am all, oh my goodness, don't get me wrong, I am all for mentors. I am all for healthy parents speaking into our lives and grandparents. I am all for good professors and teachers. That is one of my main themes is mentoring people. But when it comes to you don't even know why you're doing what you're doing, you haven't thought it through, you're just going through the motions. Well, this is what the last generation did, so that's what this generation is. This is what I'm going to do with my kids. Then I think that we've missed the point. When we haven't sat down and said, what is it that I want for this next generation? And just using the children example right now, because it's a straightforward one. So what would be good for this season of life? And this family, they took their kids and they spent a year, maybe not necessarily traveling the globe, or maybe you've seen that Netflix special where they sold everything and took their kids and traveled the world. And that would be amazing if you could do that sort of thing. But it was just this time that they were saying, years from now, we want to still be connected with our children. We want to still have that deep heart connection with them. That's even more valuable than learning the next level of math or science. And it's similar to this idea of starting your kids maybe a year later in school rather than kindergarten at 5, kindergarten at 6, you know, something along those lines. I was saying we're going to spend an extra year at home with them, and that their brain is going to be a little bit more developed when they get to school, and their social skills are going to be a little bit more developed. It's that same kind of concept of not worrying that whether or not they're going to be successful and keep up with everyone. I mean, what are we talking about here? 1 year difference of their life? I promise you, when they're 30, 40, and 50 years old, they're not going to remember that 4-year-old, 5-year-old difference of kindergarten, of when they started school. They're going to remember that they were healthier in their relationships. They're going to remember that the heart that their parents had for them. They're going to remember that connection. And so getting out of our own way and not making excuses for the things that are around us that are pressuring us, and even the really good ones. The second way that we can get out of our own way is by taking risk. I'm going to say it this way. Taking risk often means making mistakes. Often we want our new ventures to work out perfectly the first time. So let's take painting, for example. The first time you paint a portrait, a picture, a landscape, a still life, is it going to be perfect? Maybe if you are a prodigy, but for the rest of us, it takes time and energy and focus and classes, and we learn and we grow, and people go to school for years for this sort of thing. And we, in our quick fix, our quick rebuy it, if it breaks culture, we have oftentimes lost this idea or this concept of struggling through the joy of learning to paint and to draw and to do different types of art. We've lost the joy of learning to become a carpenter or to build something, of to fix up our house, to make it, to make some creative piece that we can put as a centerpiece in the middle of our kitchen table. I know for me with my kids, the joy that it brings me when they create something at school and bring it home and say, "Here, Daddy, I made this for you." Or maybe you're in a later season of life and you feel like, "Oh, my creative juices are just gone." And Mark keeps talking about creativity. "I just am not a creative person." Well, listen, we all have within us something that sparks us. Even my computer programmer friends, they say, "You know what? I thought of this new idea, this new way, this new app, this new thing that I wanted to try, the thing I wanted to go after." Oftentimes, the thing that we have lost, the reason that we feel that we don't have that creativity or that connection anymore with that side of ourselves or that side of our brain, is because years ago it was squashed. And I don't want to get into a bunch of psychology about this necessarily. That's not what this podcast is about. But I do want to say that that's one of the pieces that we need to let go of as well, is any of that discouragement in the past where we had some person that we allowed to speak powerfully in our life that squashed that piece of it. And it's okay to pick that up again, even later on in life. And it's okay to say, "This is something that I'm going to go after. I'm going to try one thing. I'm going to take a risk." And guess what? It may not work out perfectly the first time. That's okay. I'm going to take a little class. I'm going to take a little something that's going to be risky, and I'm going to count on it not being perfect the first time. The next way we can get out of our own way is by taking baby steps towards our goals. So what's a baby step? A baby step is signing up for a class, just registering for it and paying the registration fee for that school, is we're saying, "Well, I want to make sure that I'm completely committed before I sign up for this." You know what? Some of these things, especially if it's a whole degree program, a four-year program, or going back to school and getting your master's or something like that, you have to get accepted into the school first, right? You have to pay that little bit of registration. You're like, "Oh, the $50, $100, $200, whatever it is, that's still a lot of money. Ah, goodness gracious." Again, back to the excuses. But getting accepted, having that conversation with our spouse and saying, "This is something that I need for my soul. This is something I need to take a risk on. I need to keep growing and learning and keeping my brain active." I mean, what do they say? One of the biggest things for people getting older is kind of losing that cognitive, able to think quickly mentality of the brain not firing as fast as it did before. So brain is a muscle, right? It's just like anything else. It has to be worked out. It's not going to be something that's just going to work out perfectly for us the rest of our life if we don't exercise it. So take baby steps. Sign up for something. Get registered. I was joking about rec teams. You know, a silly little volleyball recreation at the YMCA, right? Some little league, some something where you meet some people. And oftentimes I've heard that people, they sign up, they connect with a group of people in their sport, in their area of interest, and after that the ball gets rolling and they say, "Okay, now that 3 months is over, do you want to be on our team again?" And you've made some new friends, you've connected around something that you're interested in. So baby steps. When people are building a house, they start by laying the cement, by pouring the bottom. Like they do something first. Until that's done, they can't put the walls up. And so second, they put the walls up. Until they put the walls up, they can't put the roof up. And so then third, they put the roof up maybe, right? And so each one happens in order. How silly would it be to put up the walls or put up the roof before the floor is laid down? But again, often we've lost that way of thinking. We want the end result right away. We want to go to the store and get that whole thing completely purchased. And sometimes we can, and sometimes that's okay. But again, like I said, that this is a piece that we've lost the art of building, of growing something. And so let's do gardening as long as we're talking about growing here. We've lost the idea of planting something and watering it and waiting for it to grow. And maybe you've heard that analogy one too many times, and it doesn't mean anything to you because you're not a gardener like me. But it's that process that I'm talking about. It's the process of letting time happen. I remember when I was a kid and I was forced to take piano lessons, as maybe some of you were as well. And now my only regret is I don't play better. But I remember one of my teachers saying, what you want to do is play a little bit every day. And then what you want to have happen is when you go to bed at night, your brain, your subconscious is going to be replaying the day in your head, including the practice that you did, the motor memory from your fingers, the process that your brain is going to go through to learning the next piece, the next page, the next piece of music. And what you need is you need your brain to be working for a long time on solving this problem. And so just sitting down and playing super intensely for a couple of days may not be as successful as playing a little bit over a longer period of time. So allow your brain some time to work out the strategies of solving these problems. Allow time to go by and allow yourself to do baby steps. So I had mentioned taking a class or building a house. How about baby steps in losing weight? Here's something that was thrown at me and I'm going to throw at you. That's a good first step in the process of getting fit or of losing weight, and that is just journaling. One of the things that you can do is journal every day what you're eating. That's it. You just write it down. You don't change anything. You just write it down. You just keep it. One of the things my wife and I did our first year of marriage is take this a finance class, and trying to decide if I want to plug who the finance class was. We'll pass on it this time. But we took this amazing finance class, and one of the teachings in this class was to write down our spending. And so he was saying, you don't have to change anything. So he picked groceries. And so with groceries, you just write for 3 months, you just write down the total amount that it costs, not even what you're buying, just the number. So let's say you go once a week to the grocery store, and every week, let's just pick a small, let's pick a number, $100. $100 a week, so that's $400, let's say, for 4 weeks, for about a month. So you spend $400, and then the next month you spend $375, and the third month you spend $425, right? So you have $375, $400, and $425. So the middle of that is $400. So you take that average of $400, the median, and that is your budget moving forward. That is how much you are to spend every month moving forward on groceries. And then whether or not you go get cash out and you put it in your wallet and you do the envelope or cash system, sometimes that works for people. But the main process is that you are writing down what you're spending. And so I would say the same thing for fitness here, is just write down what you're eating or write down what your weight is from day to day. And let that be a motivation, a long-term motivation to say, listen, I can see myself going in this direction. But it's a baby step towards a larger goal. So I want to keep this a little bit shorter today, see if we can keep it under half an hour. So I'm going to move on to reflection number 4, is stop being careful. So we had reflection number 1 of don't let the bad outweigh the good, whether in relationships, fitness, or progress in moving forward in your life. Reflection number 2, remember what is behind only enough to motivate you to move forward. Reflection number 3, get out of your own way. No more making excuses. Take risks. Take baby steps. And then finally, reflection number 4, stop being careful. And if you go back a couple of podcasts, I think it was number 3, I spent a whole podcast talking about this. So you can go back and listen to that. But what is being careful? So adventure, risk, hoping, etc. may look different for each of us. But that does not mean we should not do it. Or instead of using a double negative, I'll just say, you can do it. And if you don't know that movie reference, kudos to you, because even though it's one of my favorite comedians and movie makers, it's also lowbrow humor. So, but you can do it, all right? And the baby steps for this in not being careful may look like running to you. So run. And what I mean by that is that down the road, you're going to look back on this. You're going to look back on these baby steps that look like running to you as crawling. I promise you that when you say, I can't believe it was so hard just to register for that class after now I've completed the whole program, you're going to be amazed. You enjoyed it so much. And you're going to look back and you're going to say, okay, so listening to Mark, Mark was saying, you know, register for a couple of things. So I picked a class, I picked a rec league, I picked something else, a mentor, and I signed up and only one of the 3 worked out. But I'm so glad because that one was so amazing, was so great. That mentor turned out so great in my life. That class turned out so fantastic. Or that book club was just great. I made some new friends. So the baby steps, initially, you're like, oh my goodness, this is, anytime something's new in your life or disrupts your schedule, it can feel overwhelming. I get it. I understand. It feels like you move states, graduated college and got married all in the same year, right? It's like those, they always say, never have 3 major changes in 1 calendar year, right? And those examples of getting married, graduating college, buying a house, having a kid, those would all be major life events. Don't have 3 major life events in 1 calendar year. And when we do and we wonder why, oh, this past year was tough, there you go. Some of these things that we've learned over the years, we just need to take to heart. You know, you might go and listen to a good talk on a Sunday morning or at a class that you're taking, and you're like, oh, I really need to apply that to my life. Yes, 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 you are smarter than you think, right? You have a lot more information back in your brain there than you think. So grab on to some of these things and use them to move forward. So last thought, learn something new. And if you've listened to any of the past podcasts, you will know that this is one of the themes, and along with risk-taking and creativity, it's learning something new. Why is this important? So we get on social media, and we say, I just wish people would stop being so dumb. I can't believe they're posting these things, so I'm going to post something to back, and I'm going to learn them a lesson, right? It just makes me laugh, right? And so we want them to learn something new, but we have a really hard time being interested in learning something new and getting some new information, a new way of looking at life, a new way of approaching things. Maybe if we started getting on social media to learn, maybe if we started going to class or going to church or going to our mentor with open hands and an open heart and saying, what can I glean from this? And they said 10 things and I only took away 1. Well, great. Focus on that one thing. What's the saying? Keep the meat, throw away the bones, right? Don't eat the bones. So almost always there is something that we can learn from an encounter with another human being. Doesn't matter who it is. There's what can I learn from this situation? So that's my last thought that I want to leave you. Is learn something new this week. The end of this year is say what, reflect and say what can I learn from this past year that I had not previously known. And maybe there's three or four of them. Maybe there's a half a dozen or a dozen of them. Write them down so that you can reflect back on this year and say, what a great year this was, the year that I learned these things. With that, I will leave you and have a good day. Okay, so this is podcast episode 001. And today I'm going to do something interesting, at least interesting to me, and decide to record while I am moving furniture. So you may hear some huffing and puffing going on in the background. Basically, what the problem is here is we have an oblong living room here at my house, and there really is no central place with which to put, you know, the entertainment center along with the Christmas tree because it's Christmas season. And so, if you've ever been like me and you feel like things are just out of order, things are just not in place, not quite where they could be. They just feel a little bit out of sync, a little bit out of tune. You know, like you're listening to that song or you went to a live band and you think, this is going to be fantastic. And then one of the instruments is a little bit out of tune. And the whole way through, you're trying to ignore it as best as you can, but that one instrument just is not quite in tune. It's twanging a little bit, and that little bit of twanging ruins the whole thing for you. So that is where I'm at with this living room, and I've tried a few different ways, but I thought maybe if I walk and talk, it will all come together at the same time. So that's what's happening, if you hear that going on in the background. Second, today, and the segue here is things that are out of order that need to be reordered. Maybe I'll work on that title later on. We'll fix the title at the end, maybe something will come to me. So, yes. So today, an interesting journey that I have been on recently is I have been in school for 5 years. And in the midst of that, we kept having children. So now we are up to 4 kids. Exciting stuff. Except that I'm 46 years old and my oldest is 8. So they're 8, 7, 5, and 2. Sounds fun and exciting, yes? So I finished, I'd always promised myself I would never go back to school and get my master's when I turned 40. Well, as you would imagine, it's exactly what happened. Is a month before my 40th birthday is I signed up for seminary. I know you might be thinking, what were you thinking? And sometimes I wonder that myself. But the truth of the matter is that it worked out well. I finished my last paper before my 4th child was born, the day before, actually. So that was about 2.5 years ago. And you'll notice, little side note here, you'll notice that I talk about time a lot. And part of it is our language, the English language, leans that direction. And the other part of it is this is what it's been on my mind. This issue, this bothersome issue of time and order and how to put things in order in time, right? Right? So, you know, it's like one of those, you watch those shows where they have the cups and they're laid out in maybe a series of 8 and they got to stack them up to 1 and then unstack them down and these kids can do it in milliseconds, right? They just stack them up and unstack them and do a different formation, then unstack them again. And it's this amazing feat that they're so good at, is they're bringing order out of chaos, or order from a very simplistic item as simple as cups. So that's, but they're doing it in a measured time. The other thing that over time, that you may hear me talk about in other episodes, is CrossFit, something that I'm very passionate about. But part of the reason is because they are doing conditioning in time. There's a time stamp on it. There's an amount of time that you must finish the workout in, or you would time, that's one of two things, that or you would work out until you're done, and then you'd keep track of that time for that particular workout. The reason that this is so important is that you can see if you're moving forward in your skill set, in your workouts. So it's measured. And you'll see this in all different industries, all across their economics, any kind of job, building, construction sites, is they'll come in and they'll bid a job based upon when they can get the job done and for how much, right? Because you think about it, if it's an endless amount of time, the person's like, well, I'll go live in a different house then if it's never going to be finished, right? Like, they need it to be finished in a certain amount of time. And even the beginning of the Bible refers to time. The very first words was in the beginning of what? The beginning of time. In the beginning, God created. And then it said 7 days. We could talk about literal or metaphorical and all that sort of thing. But what we're talking about here is that it listed a time frame for it. So apparently there's some importance to this. So what does that look like? And what am I talking about in reference to this issue? Is accomplishing a task in a time frame. So we have here, I don't know what today, 30, 45 minutes, we'll see. And I should easily be able to get these three pieces of furniture, well, one, two, three couch type units and an ottoman and the TV and the Christmas tree. I think those one, two, three, four, five, six, somewhere around there. Items moved, maybe the rocking chair, 7 items moved. I should have plenty of time to do that. Most of it should be brain power and figuring out where I want them. That's always the hard part, right? Is the figuring it out where you want to put things. So that's where we're going to begin, is we're going to begin with where do we want to put things. So in this day and age, we have this magnificent thing called the internet. The internet. It is powerful. It is amazing. It will answer all of your questions. It's like the genies of the past. Can you imagine if one person years ago had access? This is me opening the blinds, if you can hear that in the background. If one person in the past had access to Google, they would put on their magic turban and pull out their magic crystal ball and then Google the answer to people's questions, right? It's like this magic genie ball that we have. And that can be a very good thing. Now, you might maybe guessing step ahead where I'm going with this, and that is, but it also can be this giant detriment that it has all of these things, but the one thing that it doesn't have is intent. The one thing it doesn't have is motivation. The one thing it doesn't have is the desire behind your question. It can't answer the question, why am I asking this question? And so we come back to this issue of measured time. So what is this thing that I want to do, that you want to do, that we want to do within this measured time? And that could seem like it, that maybe for some is an easy answer, like, oh, listen, I knew from a young age, 10, 11, 12 years old, that I wanted to be an engineer, that I wanted to be a dentist, that I wanted to be a stock car driver, right? And started practicing for it at that age, started training for it, and then went, you know, maybe did that sport all the way through high school, maybe did that hobby all through high school. And then by the time they went to college, went on and majored in that, graduated with that, and went on to do that. And I think for some, that is the story. But I would hypothesize that for many, that is not our story. I know for me, it's not my story. That we go through and we try this and we try that a little bit. In business, they call that pivoting. When something doesn't work, you pivot. And you try something a little bit different, maybe in the same field, but a little bit different, maybe in a completely different field. But the thing is, we have these measured amounts of times to complete certain tasks: high school, college, master's program, PhD, building, you know, as an engineer, building something at your job site, or as a construction worker, or as a general contractor, is building a house. You have a certain amount of measured time to complete a task. Complete it. You're done. You're good. Don't complete it. Problems ensue. this is the issue. So how do we go about, first, deciding what to do, and then two, doing it, right? So I'm attacking a very large topic here, and we'll see if I can make any headway on it. If not, we'll have to do a part two, and maybe even a part three. We'll see. So first, beginning, at the beginning, in the beginning, God created. So what is this thing that you are going to create, that we are going to create at the beginning? And I think that's the first place that people run into a problem, is they don't realize that they're actually creating something. They're creating themselves. We're creating ourselves into something. See, we think of it as, I'm going to do something. I'm going to accomplish something in the sense of provide for my family, or, hey, I got to get a job because I got to pay the bills, right? And it becomes very task-oriented. It becomes very, I don't know, bland, even uninteresting if we let it go too far, right? If we just attack it from that point of view, I think that that's where the problem comes, is at the very beginning, is that we say, this is something that I'm going to accomplish for a practical reason, not for something else. Now, that practical reason can be a good secondary reason, absolutely. I mean, most anything, when you go after it, when you accomplish it, when you get good at it, there is a way for it to serve a practical purpose. I mean, everything from, I mean, I'm referring to nowadays, you become good at running. Well, you become an Olympic athlete and get paid to be a runner, to represent your country. And that's an amazing thing. So you can do just about anything, or a coach. You can get paid to be a coach at a local college or high school as a pro, as an athlete, as the golf pro in the golf club, right? So the first way to look at it is that we are creating something, and that something is ourselves. We are moving forward in life with this idea that I am developing, I am instructing myself, I am guiding myself, I am looking for an authentic sense of who I am. And this approach becomes much more interesting than it does when we're just trying to accomplish a task for a purpose of accomplishing the task. And I knew many people that entered college, you know, even high school that way, with, let me just get through this. I'm just going to get through this, and then I'll get a good job, right? I'm just going to get the degree, just going to get the piece of paper, and all will be well in the world. And even for me, I was told that over and over again. I would say 100% of the people I talked to in high school said, get a college degree, any degree, and people will hire you, and a company will hire you, and a job will hire you. And as you can imagine, that is a huge over-exaggeration, especially, with an art degree. But I know many people with many other degrees, especially when they didn't really know at 16, 17, 18 years old what they wanted to do. And so that degree became worthless, next to worthless, when it didn't get them after what their heart was truly beating for, what they really had inside them that they want to accomplish doing. And so they would end up with this amazing job or this amazing career, but it was in a field that they didn't enjoy. It was in an area that they didn't want to continue doing. And some of those people, some of my close friends, actually, they would end up with what we call golden handcuffs. Maybe you've heard this term before. But golden handcuffs, where you are making too much money that you don't feel like you could start over at the bottom in a career of something that you really want to do, right? You're like, I am making, I don't know, $50,000, $60,000, $70,000, $100,000 a year or more. And if I went back to minimum wage at $10, $11, $12 an hour, whatever it's at nowadays, I just couldn't survive. Couldn't provide for my family. That's just ludicrous. So I just got to make it to retirement. And some of these people I know, they're 30, 35, 40 years old. I mean, they got 20 or 30 or more years left in this career that they really do not enjoy. And so sometimes our theology or our belief about our philosophy about life or about God or about how things should be kind of promote this idea. It promotes this idea that we need to suffer. It promotes this idea that all life is suffering. It promotes this idea that that's actually how you get ahead. You get ahead in life by suffering. You get ahead in life by picking one of the most difficult things there is to do and then slugging your way through it. So I would like to counter that idea and say that even with, and I'll unpack this more later, but even with things that you enjoy doing, you will still end up working hard. But I want to say this, it's a different type of hardness. It's a different type of difficultness. It's a different type of frustration. Let me put it that way. It's in the sense that let's say you have a sport that you really enjoy doing, or let's say that you have a hobby that you really enjoy doing. Let's pick needlepoint. Let's pick something like that. For one person, sticking their finger with a needle 100 times is not exciting, and it's actually painful, as you can imagine. And they cannot be paid enough to go back and keep doing that. But another person may say, I find so much joy, and yes, I understand that I'm going to poke myself a few times here and there, but that's okay, because the joy is worth it. Or maybe you're struggling to get better at this sport that you're doing, and it involves a certain amount of pain. It involves a certain amount of workouts and sweating. But the whole time you're thinking, what I'm getting out of this is worth it. And so you keep going, you keep moving forward, and every day that you show up for these practices, the days that you show up for these practices, the times that you work at this has joy in the pain. So it's a different type of pain. It's a different type of suffering. So we have too many all-inclusive statements. We have too many phrases that say life is pain. We have too many phrases that say that in order to accomplish anything, you have to suffer. And the problem is that those are partial truths. The problem is that you hear that and you say, oh yes, that is correct. There's something that resonates within that, within you, inside that statement, because there is some truth to it, because there is some validation to this. But being able to decipher, to separate, to split out what is true and what is not, that is the challenge. And that's what I'm hoping to do for you here today. So that's the first point I would like to say, is that suffering is different, that there's joy in the pain when you are in the thing that you are more passionate about, more excited to do, and that it is a joyful pain, not a miserable pain. And the second thing I want to talk to you about is this idea of after we begin, of where to go from there, of what step to do. So we've unpacked this idea. We started going after, maybe I better back up to that for a second, is picking that direction. So in a general sense, you would think this should be easy, especially back to the internet idea, right? The idea that you have all of this wealth of information and knowledge and personality profiles, and put your face in a picture here and the meme will tell you what career is best for you, and it'll give you some kind of answer like king or queen, right? Or all these little goofy tests that they've invented on these social media platforms. And so we're trying to help guide people, like, right? These things are helping to, and they like to tell us who we are. I mean, every commercial since the invention of the TV has said, you are this, and therefore you need this. It has tried to label you in a certain direction. And in some ways, those things could have been helpful, or maybe even have been helpful, that we've seen something that has inspired us, you know, back to the stock car racing thing, or back to the, I don't know, beauty pageant, maybe, you know, all kinds of different things that have maybe inspired us to go in that direction. But oftentimes, it does the opposite. It gives us so many different options, and we say, well, that looks interesting because they gloss it up and shine it up and spit shine it and sell it to you, right? Get you to buy something in this arena. And so these different fields become exciting when really that's not the direction that our hearts have been longing for this whole time. So what is it? How do we find it? Step one is to not be too introspective. Haha, that's not where you thought I was going with this, right? As we're talking about what's inside of us and our passion and our joy, right? That we think that we know ourselves, and especially in this day and age of pop psychology, and everyone is an expert on psychology. Oh dear, dear me, what is going on with this? So here is where it gets tricky and exciting all at the same time. One of the main ways that we can find out who we are, what our passion is, what our direction is, what our desires are, is with family and friends, is in community, is in groups, is in combination with others. Okay, let me prove my point to you here. In a business setting, one of the main things they've done for years and years, I would argue maybe even for thousands of years, is they get a group of people together and they say, okay, we have this big business here and we're trying to go in a certain direction. How do we make this happen? Ready, go. We're putting all ideas and thoughts, processes on the table. Let's see if we can come up with the best solution for this next direction to go with our business. And we do this with all kinds of things. I mean, let's pick Hollywood or writers or screenwriters for movies or for TV shows. Is you're going to get all the most creative minds in a room together and let's say, let's put this amazing comedy together. This is going to be so funny. This is going to be so good. And ends up winning all these awards, right? Or let's get the best minds together to build this house and to have an architect design it and then the best builder to build it. And you're doing things in groups. And it's in that combination of people where the best things come out of it. And we, especially in Western culture, we have decided that we can go it alone. We have all of these resources. We have handheld computers in our pockets, right? We have one of everything in our house or our apartment from, I don't know, looking around the room here. Let's see here, vacuum cleaner to refrigerator to all the major appliances to lamps to whatnot. We don't really need to share with other people because we can live in our own little box, our own little house, our own little apartment, or big house or big apartment, and we can be pretty self-sufficient. We don't really need to have much from anybody else. We go to our job, we get our paycheck, we pay our bills, right? So what is this community that I speak of, you might say? And I'm just going to check my timestamp here on this, and it looks like everything's going strong at 22 minutes and 50 seconds. So what is this community that I speak of? So imagine sitting around the living room years ago with your aunts and uncles and your cousins. Let me take a drink. And you're going around the room. You're in your little tribe in your little village, right? And the village gets together and says, okay, so we really need to train someone in this certain area for our village to succeed. Like we need a good, I don't know, aqueduct system. Let's go way back, right? We need a good sewer system. We need a good road. Let's do roads. Let's make it nice and clean here. We need a good road system that goes through our village, that goes through town, that can connect us with the other villages. But we really don't know the best way to do it. We've been doing it the best that we can, but we hear that over in this big city that they've invented this new type of road. It's this new type of thing. Let's send one of our young bucks, one of our young people, does, to this place to learn how to do this and then come back. And this will help to bring industry into our village, into our town, help us to connect with the neighboring villages. And let's send somebody away. Let's finance it. Let's give them some money and some food and transportation. And so we send that person from our community. And they go and they learn this trade, they learn this skill, and they come back and they do that exact thing. They build a road that connects the villages. They build a system, a connection, an aqueduct, the thing that the village needs, that the people need for this, and they go in that direction. But here's the clincher. That's even funnier. Here's the clincher, is that they look around and do they say, let's just pick any random person? And they could do that, and maybe some have in the past. But what they're going to look for is someone who has a natural inclination, a natural direction, a natural drive, interest in that field. And they pick one of their people, and they say, you would be perfect for doing this. And the person, they light up, they get excited, and they're like, wow, my whole group is encouraging me, supporting me, in the very thing that I've always wanted to do, and the thing that makes me come alive, that makes me excited. And the point here is that the world needs what you are excited about. The world needs you to go after that thing. The world needs you, your village, your people, the people around you need you to go after that passion that's inside of you. That interest, that inclination. Maybe it hasn't developed to a passion yet, but it's an interest or an inclination. So that's the first piece of this. The first piece is that our village, our tribe, our group of people needs us to go after this. So that's the first step. That's one way that I can show you, that I can describe to you of how to discover the direction to go in life, how to pick something, is get the group of people that are closest to you. If you have to message them, if you have to contact them through technology, whatever it is, phone calls, emails, text messaging, whatever it is, and ask the hard questions. How do you see me? What do you see me as? Who do you see me as? What do you think I would succeed in? What do you think that I get excited about? What if you were to describe me to somebody else, how would you describe me? A lot of times we're afraid of those answers, so we don't ask them in the first place. But I would encourage you to be brave, to be courageous, and to go after this, and to just let it be what it is. Let people respond to you. You know, if you're more fearful about having the conversation over the phone, then maybe do it over text, and let them write it to you. And I don't know if you can hear that. That's a helicopter, which is very rare in these parts. But alas, there's a helicopter. So that's the first way to go about discovering this. The second thing is once we've had this, let me say this. You can do this multiple times throughout your life. This isn't sort of a one-stop shop. I did this when I was 10 or 20 or 30 years old, and that's what they told me, so that's what I've been doing. No, we're always growing and changing, and they're always inventing new industries and new ways of doing things. And there's still going to be more pivoting that happens throughout life. And it's okay to check in with people. And I think part of the reason why people haven't done this is the lack of trust. Is we just have a hard time believing that people have our best interests in mind. We have a hard time, I'm the only person that I can trust. And that's really actually a dangerous way to go about life. That's a dangerous way to just be so introspective and so defensive that we don't let anybody in. So step one, let people in, let them help you answer that big question. So let's move forward a little bit and just say that we have picked that. We have started running in that direction, or at least walking in that direction. Let's walk, okay? Let's walk in that direction. So we went to the school, we went to the class, we learned the thing, we're doing the needlepoint, we're doing the road construction, we're doing this thing, right? And then all of a sudden we run into a bump. And this bump could be a huge thing. It could be a death in the family. It could be lack of funds to complete the degree. It could be discouragement from other family and friends, or maybe from the same ones that encouraged you to do it in the first place, and that feels complicated. So here we sit, frustrated, depressed, maybe angry. Our heart feels like it's collapsing inside us. And what did I get myself into? We pull our hair out. Halfway through this, so far in debt, I'm so far in over my head, the classes are too hard, the task is too difficult, the apprenticeship is failing, my boss my internship, my boss doesn't like me. Whatever. This was a colossal waste of time. So we hit these road bumps, we hit these roadblocks. And here's the thing, is that you almost always will. This isn't a place where some people run into this. No. Most people run into this. And I would dare say all people run into this. And if you know what, if you've lived a butterfly and rainbows and roses life, God bless you. You are a golden child. You are a light to the world. You have lived an amazing life. And that is awesome. For the rest of us, this is pretty common. This is pretty normal. And we write songs about these people. We write movies about these people that have overcome adversity, that have pushed through this frustrating life and circumstances and made it through and graduated and accomplished and started that business and got that promotion and got that job and created that painting and built that house. Right? We love those stories. It brings tears to our eyes when that runner runs across the finish line and breaks the ticker tape. Wow, am I mixing my metaphors here? And breaks the tape and wins the race. And we think all of that hard work was worth it. Well, we're back to our story of us sitting in the middle of this situation and feeling like it's not worth it. And that race and that winning, that seems so far away, that seems so difficult, so impossible. And we're in the middle. So here we are. We're living in the middle of the dark ages. We're living in the middle of our life and saying, what do I do to get through this? Where's that motivation? You know, you have maybe all these young people or the class behind you that seems that much more passionate than you do. That person that's gaining on you and that you're comparing yourself to, that situation that used to be really good and then a downturn in the economy happened, right? And so we say, it's impossible. We start having all these phrases that we say to each other. I can't do this. This other person could. The other person has more access to resources. They have more access to fitness or to their health, or they have more access to healthcare or whatever it is to keep going through it. One of my favorite stories is of a 40-year-old Olympic swimmer who made the Olympic team, and she said one of her most difficult thing was not training for the races, was not getting her daughter to school on time, was not navigating life's happenings with her family or her kids or whatnot. The most difficult thing that she had was getting her body to relax after a really hard workout. And you might say, what does that have to do with anything? So as our bodies age, they don't naturally relax as maybe a teenager or a 20-something, right? And so we have to learn to calm ourselves. We have to learn to get that massage or get that, do that stretching yoga exercise or sit in that hot tub or ice bath, whatever it is that makes that work. And she said, so a lot of what I go through is at the, she said, I get this really long massage at the end of every day. And where other people on the team might be able to go out and party, have a good time, whatnot, I have to make sure that I go and get this massage, right? That I go and I get this done to make sure that my body relaxes after this. It doesn't stay tight for the next day and then hurt me even more. So that story just intrigues me because it tells us something, right? It tells us that it's not only important to work hard at something, it's not only important to struggle and to fight for something that we want, but it's also important to relax. It's also important to be at peace. It's also important to know when to call it quits. And not quit overall, but to take a break. A lot of pushing through, for at least for me, for my degrees, included taking those breaks and scheduling in those times to do that. So step one is finding people around you that can speak into your life and help guide you in the right direction. Then step two would be learning to take breaks to motivate yourself. We listen to Tony Robbins and we listen to these powerful, amazing motivational speakers that just rock us to our core, and they shake us, and we tell them at the end, this was worth $1 million, right? We say, this was so powerful and amazing, and for a while, we're amped, we're jacked, we're excited, right? And that's good, and that's good. But my question has been, what does long-term motivation look like? What does it look like when you're stuck in the middle of a semester, when you're stuck in the middle of a recovery of coming back from an injury, when you're stuck in the middle of a relationship that doesn't seem to be fixing itself if you just give it enough time, right? They say time mends all wounds, right? Heals all wounds. And it doesn't seem to be healing, right? How do we find that center, that core, that peace, that place? And so finding that, connecting with that, sitting in your hot tub, sitting with a cup of coffee, relaxing at night, reading a good book, building this into our life is extremely crucial, extremely beneficial to those ups and downs that life throws at us. Those times of meditation where you can just come and center yourself and feel whole again. Super important. And this doesn't seem like this would be a motivating thing, but it really is. It's a thing that will get you through and that will help you to feel revitalized the next day. So continuing on with the motivation topic, so we have the picking the passion, the finding the motivation, and the staying in the motivation. The other thing is that I feel has been largely downsized, at least in the spiritual community or in a lot of Christian churches, has been this idea of fitness or this idea of treating your body well. The ancient tradition in the Judaism and Jewish culture was that we are bodies that have a soul. In the modern day Christianity, the philosophy is, the theology is, that we are a soul who has a body, or we're a spirit that has a body. We have it reversed. A lot of modern day theologians in the Christian community would lean towards this idea that we are a spirit or a soul, depending on which word you like, and we can get into that another podcast, but that we are initially that with a body wrapped around us. And there's a few problems that runs into. Is one is, as you can imagine, we don't take care of our bodies then. We don't feel the need to do that. When some of these theologians cite this scripture, this biblical passage that says our bodies will pass away, and when we get to this magical place called heaven, right? When we get to this magical place called heaven, we'll be given new bodies. We'll be giving new bodies. Sometimes I think, I've seen that sci-fi movie. I've seen that, where they can take your consciousness out of you and they can put it into a new body. That's amazing. That's awesome. And I'm not trying to minimize or mock. I really am not. I'm just saying that's what comes to my mind sometimes when I hear people say things like that, when I hear them minimize the importance of this amazing piece of equipment, this body that God has given us, that we've been given, right? And I understand that different people have had different birth defects or things that they've run into at the beginning of life or in the middle of life, or car accidents or illnesses that have come along. And I love doctors and I love healers and I love spiritual gurus and all of the above that go after trying to heal that really want to bring people to make them as whole as the person wants to be, as the person can be, as the person is able to be. And I think that's powerful. But we go back again to that, the race analogy or the idea of somebody that worked hard to accomplish something. Another one of my favorite stories is of a gentleman, and I should have looked up his name. I didn't look it up before this, before I started this. But I think he was around 50 years old, and he had a son who was physically handicapped. And he had decided that he wanted to do a triathlon. And so his son said that he wanted to do with him. And his son was probably about this time, about 20 years old, and the dad was 50. And so the dad just got ripped. He got jacked. And he flew to Hawaii and just didn't do any triathlon. He did the Ironman triathlon. And how triathlons work is the lowest one. The basic one, the first one, is called a sprint. And the sprint is usually about anywhere from... So first of all, let me say that triathlons are three parts. They start with the swim, always, and then the bike, and then the run. As you can imagine, probably for logical reasons, if you ended with the swim, you probably get some people drowning because they're so exhausted from the race, so it's better to start with it. And then same thing, if you ended with the bike, we get people falling off bikes going, you know, 50, 60, 70 miles an hour, however fast they go now. And so that wouldn't be good. So you end it with the run. If you fall down, jogging, not as deadly as the other two. So that's the order of the race. And they have four different levels, generally speaking. The first one's a sprint. And the sprint is usually about an 800, 600 to 800 meter swim. And then the bike is usually an 8 to 10 mile bike. And then maybe 12 miles. And then the run is usually about 5K, right? So that's the basic. And then you take those numbers and you double them for the Olympic triathlon. And then the next one, you double that for the half Ironman, and you double that for the Ironman. And so these Ironman races can be like a 24-hour race. This can be a pretty extensive race. And with the ones that happen in Hawaii, that this one that this man did was in open water ocean. You can do all kinds of triathlons. You can have ones that start in a swimming pool at some rec center, or you can have it in a lake, or in this case, in the ocean. And then some of them, you can have bikes that are on all flat terrain. Or you can have ones that climb mountains and go down mountains. So they have steep climbs and steep downhills. And then same thing with the run, ones that have steep flat runs or ones that have steep runs. So the Ironman in Hawaii is considered to be one of the more challenging ones. And so he was determined to do this. So he put his handicapped son in a boat. And then he put this harness around his shoulders. And then he swam the miles. And I'm not sure how many it is. I want to say more than 10 miles. That he had to swim in this triathlon race in the open water ocean, pulling his son behind him. And then, of course, got on his bike, and he had rigged up the seat on the front of the bike. I don't know if the balance was better that way. Not sure if he wanted his son to be able to see the race all the way through, but he built this seat on there, and then he was able to bike the miles and miles he needed to go, 100-something. If I'm remembering correctly. And then lastly was the jog. And this is where he put his son on his back and carried him and ran the last of the piece of the race. And I mean, as you can imagine, the documentary for this thing was phenomenal that they created, and inspiring and driving. And this had nothing to do with making money, right? It had nothing, which maybe it did eventually, but initially for the father, for the husband, for the dad that did this, his heart was for his son, right? His heart, he had a driving passion to train and you can imagine too, the training that they had to do for this together too, of putting him on this bike and putting him on his back to run and making sure that the son could endure this as well. Because, you know, just even riding along in this race or being in the boat would be challenging. So we're at motivation, and we're at a secondary way to stay motivated. And this way is the first thing is peace and rest. And then the second way that we're looking at this is this driving force inside of us that has something deeper than just provision, just providing. It's got to be something that wakes us up in the morning. It's got to be something that we love. It's got to be something that our heart beats for. And it can start off as a small beat. I mean, I've known people that just love drawing, and they become architects. or people that, I mean, right now I have little ones, as I mentioned at the beginning, and all of their ideas are just sprouting. They're just being created. They're just being launched. And we're trying to nurture them. We're trying to hear it, listen to it, and find out what would be the thing that they could sink their teeth into, that they could just wake up and be excited to go be a part of and give to their world and connect with the world around them. So I think that that sometimes we look at the world as something to be conquered. But what if it can be a world that can be danced with? What if it can be a world that can be lovingly partnered with? What if the people in it are here to support and encourage us? And even the ones, you know, as a little side note here, as I bring that up, even the ones that seem like they're out to get us are the ones that seem like, wow, they are making my life difficult. My life would be so much easier if that person went and, you know, moved down the street somewhere else, right? And so we say, but even those people could be encouragers. Even those people could help mold us in that direction. I remember one time that I was really going after something and just failed miserably. I mean, it was just like one of those things that just crashed and burned. And I remember thinking, well, guess that's not the direction I'll be going this year, right? And it was okay. And it was a learning thing. And that wasn't because it failed. It was because this wasn't something that I was passionate enough about, that I had an inkling enough towards, that it'd be something that I would keep working on, that I would keep doing. Then there's been other things that I was, but even the way to get there involved things that I didn't necessarily enjoy. I mean, a simple example would be college, would be school, and there's certain classes you have to take, you know, that aren't your favorite, but get you to the place that you want to be, get you that degree that you want to have. And so you take those and you power through them and you figure it out and you ask questions and you get help and you get a tutor and you do all the things that it takes to get to that place that you want to be. So the second piece of the motivation process is to push past the difficult circumstances, even people that may be challenging to you. And don't worry about being extremely strongly passionate about it initially. Allow your curiosity, your interest to be intrigued, to be sparked, to be excited towards something, and then take a risk, take a chance. And so that segues me into the third piece of motivation, and that's risk-taking. And this would almost be, I would argue, one of the most important things. Because if you're constantly being peaceful, which is good, and you're constantly powering through things, which is awesome. But it's more from a frustrated standpoint rather than an excited curiosity standpoint, then it's not going to be as good as this third one, which is taking risks. So our motivation starts waning, let's say, that we're working towards something, and we're like, ah. What have I, like I said before, what have I gotten myself into? And I'm doing the peace thing that Mark talked about and making sure that I get rest and meditating, I'm doing my yoga, whatever it is, right? And then second, I'm powering through things that are difficult and I'm not complaining. I'm being grateful in the midst of having a difficult class that I don't enjoy or difficult situation. And I'm doing that and I'm staying motivated. And I have my family and friends around me that help guide me in this direction in the first place. And I'm making sure that I'm reconnecting with them on a regular basis. Okay, you guys still feel like this is a good thing for me? I can still use that encouragement. Doing all those things and just still not feeling it, right? Still feeling like, okay, is this the thing? You know, what am I doing here? And I think that's when we pivot and we take a risk. Or we add a piece onto this that will help us to clarify this direction. So let's start with a silly example and move towards a more serious one. let's say that you're, you know, back to the stock car racer. I've never been a stock car racer. I really know nothing about it, but for some reason it keeps coming to my mind. So we'll run with it. So you're a stock car racer and you're like, I'm just not getting the draft that I want. And so you come up with this new design for this new fin or this new spoiler, this thing that you can add to your car. That can help you to do what you want to do in your races. And you take a risk and you add this thing onto there. You're like, wow, this is so much better than what I was doing before. Let's say that you're a medical professional at all different levels, doctor, nurse, medical assistant, kinesiologist, I don't know, you're a medical professional, and you're like, I'm enjoying what I'm doing, but it's not quite exactly what I was thinking. So you go take this weekend course, you go check out this speaker that's in a little bit similar but different area that you're in, and you're like, yes, that's it. That's the thing. But you had to take the risk and go to this thing. And maybe some of your new friends in your profession or in your area, your field, like, what are you doing? You're walking away from what we're doing. You're like, no, I'm just going to check it out. This is okay. There's nothing wrong with that. I'm allowed to do this. Because it's easy when other people have found their thing to squash when you're still pivoting and looking for your thing. And so it's important to take risk. It's important to be challenged, to challenge ourselves. And sometimes people, the world won't really do that for us. Like, most of the world is wired to kind of push us in the direction of try to be peaceful, try to not be in conflict with each other, right? So, and even the powerful, they might say, stop arguing with me, let me have my way. Right, they're gonna push you to be peaceful and to be quiet and to not say anything and not do anything. And the same thing with people in your job or your workplace. They might say, just be happy and content with your position, and don't try to take a manager position or apply for the next one or whatever. Let somebody else do that. That's fine. Or the other person that's already doing it is doing it just fine. And I'm not saying that there isn't a thing to be said for being content. So that was a double negative. Let me put it in a positive statement. That it is good to be content where you're at. And I think that we should be. With that said, it's okay to be excited and curious about what's next. One of my favorite examples in this area is my beloved sister, one of my sisters. Won't say who, but she, it seems like every time that she has started a new position or a new job with a new company, pretty quickly they want to promote her. And saying, okay, you've been here a year, you've been here 2 years, are you ready for the next position, director, vice president, whatever, I don't know. And they're excited, like she does her job so well, and they appreciate her so much. And I remember talking to her a couple of years ago, and she says, I finally think that I make enough money, I work the hours I want to work, I'm pretty content where I'm at. I have a few employees that report to me, and it's good. I'm in a good place. And that, like, that sentence is one of the most heartwarming things I can hear in my life. It's one of the most amazing things that I feel like, that when somebody has found their place in the world, right? They found the connection. They found the thing that makes their heart feel content, and that they can go to every day. They can wake up to and say, "Yep, this is it." And the places they go to, the other people say, "Yep, that's it for you. That's great. We really like you here, and you are a great fit for this." Because, like I was saying before, sometimes those people that push back against us and say, this isn't a good fit for you, you're not doing this well, that can be a positive thing as well, right? That can be something that you can say, thank you for letting me know this. This famous, what shall we call him? Mogul, wealthy businessman. In one of his books, he said, one of my favorite things is when somebody comes to me after working for me for 3 weeks and they say, I quit. This is not the position for me. And he said, I have thousands of employees, but I'm always impressed with that person that's like, I'm not going to waste your time. No, don't waste my time. I'm not going to waste your time. I've been here 3 weeks. I kind of figure out what the job's all about now. And it's not for me. And he's like, I thank them that they didn't make me waste all this training on them for the next year or two for them just to go away and to not be a part of the system. I have to start all over again with somebody new. And so we think that we have to be these, pardon me, these amazing, committed non-movable people that whatever we start, we have to finish. If that was true, I'd still be working at McDonald's today, you know, serving people fries, right? Like, and I'm not saying there's anything wrong with commitment. That's gonna be my next podcast, is the importance of commitment. Whew. In this generation, this day and age, I feel like that's sorely lacking. So I'm definitely not saying that. It is very important to be committed to relationships, family, friends, things like that. But in this particular context, we're talking about pivoting, moving forward, seeing what's next, what's around the next bend, having curiosity, having wonder at what else there is, being excited about this world and this place that we call home, right? And I think that one of the groups of people that I'm most fascinated by in regards to this topic is travelers. My brother is one of my sisters is one, and I've met a number of other people. In the place that I'm living now, it attracts world travelers. And so there are, I know for sure, almost 1,000 new people that come to school here in the town I live in for this particular school that's here. It attracts internationals. And so my kids and my wife and I were constantly running into people from all over the world. And they just have the most interesting and amazing stories. And then even we have some housing that we do for people. And so we're able to connect over dinner and some other events that we have. That their stories are just fascinating of their view of the world, of their experiences, of the cultural diversity they have. And one of the things that is amazing to me, and maybe you've heard this before, maybe not, but as much as their stories are so different, there's so much that we do relate on. There's so much we do engage on being human and being on this planet and engaging with our kids and engaging with our cars we drive or with the mountains we climb or with the activities that we do. I find sometimes I relate to them more than the guy across the street, you know, who might have a completely different lifestyle than I have. And so I'm constantly encouraged and constantly inspired by this group of people who have traveled halfway around the world to come and to explore, to pivot, and to say, this intrigued me, this school, this idea, this thing I wanted to check out, I wanted to incorporate into my life. And so they're taking this risk. So that's the third thing. And when it comes to motivation, is taking risk, probably the most powerful thing. So as this is just a general overview of picking passion, discovering motivation, developing motivation, I'd like to leave you with this idea. This idea that we're all in process. This idea that we don't have it figured out yet. This idea that we need each other. This idea that complete introspection and hiding in isolation in a corner is not going to do it. It's not going to work. Taking risks, connecting, engaging, exploring. This is how we get to the next step. This is how we pivot. This is how we get into our calling, into our destiny, into our passion. So go forth, prosper, be inspired, be encouraged, create, renew. Develop, and we will talk to you next time.